Tonight is Wednesday, December 18th, Lael, 21st day of the month of Kislev. This is the women's Gemara share. We're doing Inyanei Chanukah. Hey, Rabotai. Tonight, the next Wednesday night, we're going to focus on topics concerning Chanukah. And we are going to see an interesting machloket tonight. An interesting machloket. Yeah. Okay. That which you have in front of you, source Aleph, looks like the Gemara, but it's the Rif. The middle in the Gemara, it looks like the Gemara, it is the Rif. I once told you the Rif was one of the early codifiers of Jewish law, and he only commented on that which is halachically relevant. So, on a Gemara that has no relevance today, the Rif didn't write one word. For example, anything in Seder Kutchin, Zvachim and Menachot, the Rif doesn't comment, because it has no relevance to us today. And even where he does comment, he doesn't rewrite the entire Gemara. He leaves out all of the Agadic statements, much of the dialogue as to how you prove something. He cites very selectively that which is relevant lahalacha. So tonight we're going to see a section which he does quote, and we'll see. We'll hopefully, in light of what I just said, you'll ask the compelling question on the Rif, and we will try to address it, and we will gain some perspective about one of the primary aspects of the Yom Tov of Chanukah related to the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot. So, the Rif writes, here he's citing the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. It looks like exactly the Gemara, he didn't change one word. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned a Braita. Mitzvat Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is defined as Ner Ish Ubeito, one candle per household. That is the primary mitzvah. One candle per household per night. So you need 8 candles to fulfill the mitzvah for your entire flock. Hamehadrin, those who want to beautify the mitzvah, ner lechol echad ve'echad, have one candle per night per member of the household. Per member of the household. Now, that's what they're going. That's stage number one of Hidur. Ner lechol echad ve'echad. There are two ways how to interpret that. Rambam interprets this that it is still only one person lighting. Nobody lights except for the head, whoever is designated as the lighter for tonight. Typically, the head of household will light. And that individual will light one candle per person that is in this house. So if you have a husband and 5 children in the home, somebody will light 7 candles. Every single night, they'll light 7 candles.
Seven different menorahs, one on each?
No, it probably would be a separate menorah, yes.
Couldn't do the same menorah because then you'd be lighting for the other night.
What?
Then you'd be lighting for the other night. If you did it in the same menorah.
No, if you have everyone on the same. Right. Right now you're never increasing the number. Every night you're lighting one candle.
Right.
So every night you'd light 5 candles in your house. Every night 4 candles, 5 candles. Every night you light the same. But it would be the head of household who lights it. The Rama interprets this line that every person should light one candle every single night. The stage of the Mahadrin is to light, every person lights one candle every single night. Faha Mahadrin mina Mahadrin, and those who want to be super, I want to say super from, super being Mahader, really want to beautify the mitzvah. So here there is a debate between Shammai and Hillel. Beit Shammai Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Shmoneh. Beit Shammai says on the first night of Hanukkah, next Sunday night, you light 8 candles. Mikan Va'elech Poches V'Holech. You go down every single night, and on the last night of Hanukkah, you light 1 candle. Ubeit Hillel Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Achat. Mikan Va'elech Mosif V'Holech. Beit Hillel says the first night you light 1, every night you increase it, so that on the 8th night you light 8 candles. Right. So that's a second stage. Second stage. We will come across an unusual position of Tosfot tonight, and this is going to be a machlokes to Rambam and Tosfot. A usual opinion of Tosfot that this second stage of adding, depending on what number it is, what night it is, and we'll forget about Beit Shammai for a minute, we'll always talk about Beit Hillel, because that's what we follow, is only if you ignore stage number 2. Only if you want to ignore everybody lighting. Then, if you want to go back to the original practice, where it's one candle per family, now you can be mehader and what? And have that one person on the first night light 1, second night 2, eighth night 8. But if you want to have everybody light, Tosfot will say, you can't increase the number of candles per night. You always have to light one candle every single night. We're going to see why a little later, but that's what Tosfot will say. So let's just read on a little more, and then once I read to the bracketed line there, you will now be able to hopefully challenge the Rif based on his own position as to what he decides to quote.
You see, are you hoping on the menorah, the 8 candles, the 8 days and stuff? Is that negating that?
No.
In other words, if there's
He's not.
If there's 10 people in your household
and everybody wants to light,
so then it's not 8. It's
there will be 10 in your 10 every night in your house.
Okay.
But if you want to increase to reflect the number of the you can't do that with everybody.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. Only one person can light the menorah. Correct. No. You can't have more multiple menorah in your house. Mm-hmm. Only you will light.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
That's Tosfot. We'll see. We're going to see it inside in Tosfot. And Sephardic Jews conduct themselves that way. Sephardic Jews only light one menorah. Unless the kids are little pishers, and then they're screaming their heads off, we want a light. And of course they allow them to light for chinuch. But once a Sephardic girl reaches age 12, Sephardic boy reaches an age 13, they never light anymore. Because the Shulchan Aruch, Karo, ruled like Tosfot. That you can't have both the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin. We, Ashkenazim, the Ramah, follows the Rambam, who says, oh, it's okay to do both. So it depends if you're a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi. Sephardi or an Ashkenazi. Michal, she doesn't like. The kids like because they're all below bar mitzvah. But once one of them becomes bar mitzvah, he will not light anymore. So now, says the Gemara. The Gemara is going to try to explain the machloket between Shammai and Hillel, whether you go down or you go up. Says the Gemara. Ta'amayu the Beit Shammai. The reason for Beit Shammai is Kineged Parei HaChag. It is to commemorate the Korban Musaf of the Yom Tov of Sukkot. On the Yom Tov of Sukkot, the Torah tells us in Parshat Pinchas that you're supposed to bring 70 bulls during the course of the 7 days of Sukkot. On the first day you bring 13, the second day 12, and you finally wind up on the seventh day with 7. So if you take PQ calculus and you add up 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, you wind up with 70 bulls. So Shammai says, since the pattern of the 70 bulls is not to go from 7 to 13, it goes from 13 to 7, so you go down by Hanukkah as well. That's explanation number one. Inami, alternatively, I'll give you the explanation. Kineged Yomim Hanichnasim. To represent how many days are left. How many days are yet to come? So on the first day, there are 8 days yet to come. So you light 8. On the third day, there are only 5 days left. So you light 5, and so on and so forth. That's Shammai. So what question would you like to ask thus far? Not the main question yet. What question would you like to ask thus far?
What does
Sukkot have to do with Hanukkah? That's a question which has troubled all Parshanim. You know, I'll find something else where you also go, or you go up and down. You know, why is the number of Parim? So most historians believe that Hanukkah was established to replace the last Yom Tov of Sukkot, which they failed to observe. Don't forget, the Yevanim had control of the Beit HaMikdash. And as we say in the Brayta, they defiled all the oil. So none of the korbanot that was supposed to be offered, nor were Am Yisrael in a mood of observing anything, or they couldn't, there was such an attack against their religious life. So they were looking to establish a replacement for the Yom Tov of Sukkot. And that's why they made it 8 days. Nothing to do with the cruise of oil. The Yom Tov of Sukkot is 8 days, 7 days in Shmini Atzeret. And a second suggestion is, that's why you recite the whole Hallel on Hanukkah, because you always recited the whole Hallel on Sukkot. On Sukkot. Just one more second. So if it is somehow the replacement or the opportunity to observe something in the Mikdash in lieu of the fact that we understand why they looked at the Parei HaChag as the symbol as to why you would be going down. Because there is indeed a connection between Hanukkah and Sukkot. Yes?
My understanding, along with your historians, is that they were fighting during Sukkot and so forth.
That is very possible.
And that there were lulavim associated with Hanukkah at the beginning.
That is correct. That is correct. It's quoted in Megillat Chashmonaim, which has not made it into our, you know, sacred text, but it's called Sfarim Chitzonim, but historians rely on it all the time, on Sefer HaMakabim, Sefer Chashmonaim, yeah.
So, if Hanukkah is supposed to be Tashlim for,
yes,
celebrated Sukkot, Tashlim should be a one-to-one correspondence. So for 1 year that they didn't have Sukkot, they would do the Tashlim in Hanukkah. Why Hanukkah LeNetzach?
Because it's a good question. It's a good question. Because once they established it, you know, the Gemara said that they wanted to commemorate for years, Lido wrote, what happened? The trial, the tribulations, and the battles. So once they established that the first year, Lishana Acheret, they, you know, emulated. But it's a good question. Now, what does Kineged Yomim HaNichnasim have to do with something? What is Yom? How many days are yet to come? And Hillel's going to say, how many days have already passed? What does that mean in terms of understanding why we go up or down? So the Rav suggested very simply that there are two ways you can look at offering a holiday in praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can thank Him for the actual miracle that He performed, or you can thank Him for the removal of the crisis that you were confronted with. And Rabbeinu Shalom had a crisis, and you took care of that crisis. So what was the crisis in the Mikdash after all the oils were defiled? They didn't have any oil. So if we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what He did, the miracle, well, the miracle was obviously much greater on day number 2 than it was day number 1. Day number 7 was bigger than 6. Day number 8 was the greatest miracle. That's going to be Hillel. Kineged Yamim Hayotzim. Shammai believes that the holiday and thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to thank Him for addressing our need, our crisis. The crisis was, I had no oil. Well, how long was it going to? How long is that crisis going to last? 8 days. Because we knew that by the time they start producing more oil, they can produce more oil. And they did after 8 days. So the crisis was the greatest on day number 1. Because they knew they're not going to have new oil until 8 days from now. On day 8, you don't get so crazy. Why? Tomorrow morning we're going to have fresh oil. So what am I getting nuts for? So Shammai believes it's not just the number of days that we are yet to come. Shammai believes that the essence of Hoda'ah is the resolution of your crisis. And the crisis was greatest on day number 1. Those are the explanations of Shammai. And Hillel says, V'tamayu de beis Hillel, k'neged yamam hayotzin, we just explained that. Inami, alternatively, mishum ma'alin bakodesh ve'ein moridin. That whenever you have a series, it's not that automatically ma'alin bakodesh ve'ein moridin. Whenever you have two things which are somehow related to one another, which have to be done, the sequence should be to go up in Kiddusha and not down in Kiddusha. Does anybody know of an area where we apply this halach of Malin Bakodesh Vein Moridin? What?
A building that was a shul, you can only make something.
Good. To convert the shul, you can make it into either a Beit Midrash, or you can buy an Aron. If you sell the Aron, you can buy mantles for the Sefer Torah. Each time you get closer to the source of all Kiddushah, the Sefer Torah. But to go the other way, to take a mantle of a Sefer Torah, which actually bedecks the Sefer Torah, and just to use that money to sell it and buy an Aron, that's going downhill. Can't do that.
We say the Sefer when we count Sefira. How do we do that? We say every day we'll add every day.
Okay, but that's not because of, that's not Malin Bakodesh. It's an interesting idea, but it's not Malin Bakodesh. Another one is when the fellas daven, they put their talis on before their tefillin. Yes. One of the explanations is because of Ma'alin Bakodesh. You go, talis doesn't have any kedusha whatsoever. Does not have kedusha. Because what creates an element of kedusha is the Devar Hashem. So even though there are some people who little put the bracha or whatever it is on their thing, a talis doesn't require that. A talis is no kedusha whatsoever. Technically, even though when you go into every conservative shul for a dinner, and you go to the bathroom, there's a big sign, please take your talis off before you go into the bathroom. It's nishkefelech if they walk in. That should be their worst avera. Why? Because a talis doesn't have kedusha.
What about the tzitzit on the top?
doesn't have Kedusha. It's for a mitzvah.
It's a mitzvah, so
but it doesn't mean that it has sanctity. And therefore, technically, if a talus is worn out, you can throw it in the garbage can. We don't like to do that because we try to respect them, but there's no requirement that a talus be buried, no geniza for a talus. Tefillin have Kedusha, because the parshiot has the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in it. That endows it with Kedusha.
So let's say like a lulav and an etrog, you can't just throw it in.
Yes, you can.
But you should wrap
we
it.
Try not to, so you wrap it up. Exactly.
With like challah, you don't really just...
Yes, but that's, again, not because it has any Kedusha.
But once you've said a bracha and you've used it for something...
It doesn't have Kedusha. Yes. Nope. They do not.
You could just throw it in the garbage.
Technically, yes. The Gemara's expression is nizrokin, means thrown in the garbage. So we don't. We'll wrap it in a plastic bag. Your lulav and esrog, you can put in the recycled dumps with the leaves that come, you know, when they come to pick up. You, a lot of people, that's the lulav. You burn, or the hoshanis, actually. That's what we do. In the Altaheim, they used to throw the hoshanis on the top of the aron and leave it there until Pesach and then burn it with the chametz. You don't have to.
So just the fact that it doesn't translate, that's like a
mezuzah, or tefillin, correct. That endows it with Kedusha. Correct. Correct. Good. Very nice. Now comes the next three lines. I'm going to go to sleep until you ask the question. The next three lines. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, said Rabba, the son of Bar Chana. Amar Rab Yochanan, who said it in the name of Rab Yochanan. Shnei Zikanim Hayu B'Tzidon. There were two elderly scholars in the city of Tzidon. Echad Asa Kedivrei Beis Shammai, the Echad Asa Kedivrei Beis Hillel. One conducted themselves like Shammai, and one conducted themselves like Hillel. Zen Notein Tam Lidvarav Kineged Parei Hachag. This one gave the reason as to why he followed Shammai, because the bulls of Sukkot go down. Vizeh and the other guy who followed Hillel notain tam ledvarav mishumal bakodesh velo marida.
What do you have on the halacha that you can do that? Two separate things.
Okay, that's a good question. That's a good question. How do you have some scholars following Shammai? The answer is not so difficult. Why? Because they were Shammaiites. He may have been a Shammaiite. And this is before the halacha was established for us that we follow Hillel. There are guidelines in the Talmud for Psak. Because otherwise we'd never know what to do. Because there's 60,000 machloikas. So you got to have some piskei halacha. So we always follow Hillel against Shammai, except three times. We follow Shammai against Hillel. We always follow Rava against Abaye, except six times we follow Abaye. So there are some rules. We always follow Rav, except if it's Dine Mamonos, we follow Shmuel. So there are all kinds of rules. Rules. Very nice. So what question am I expecting you to ask me in light of my introductory remarks tonight? Yes, Judy.
I don't know if this is the one you're expecting.
Okay, give it a try.
It doesn't say which one gave which reason, and it would seem obvious as to which reason belongs with which of the...
Okay, but again, I reiterate, I made some introductory remarks about who we are reading.
He's going to give us a psak here.
Oh, we're reading
the Rebbe's. He only talks about
it. Why is he telling me the story? Oh, right. Who cares about the story?
Right.
Who cares about the story? We know this information already. How do we know the information? We just learned it. It just said it's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Hillel.
It doesn't add anything.
It adds nothing to the discussion. Right. So everybody asks the question, what was running through the candy man's mind? The Riff is Yitzchak of Fez. He's the Fez dealer with a little dispenser. That's how he made a living. He sold those candies.
What? We didn't sell fez hats.
No, yeah. No, candy. No fez candy. That's it. Yes, it is in Morocco. That's what he did. Well, what's he contributing to our understanding of the halacha? It's nice. He found a scholar. It's in the Gemara. Okay, the Gemara does lots of things. Tells us interesting stories. But the Rif is not a storyteller. He's a halachist. How does this amplify for us what is happening in this particular sugya? In this particular sugya. Good.
Does it tell us that both are legitimate?
What?
Does it tell us that halacha?
It might. It might. Maybe he's trying to communicate that in this case, you know, maybe it is legitimacy to... Perhaps. That's a good suggestion. I'm not saying no. Good. So now, legos arayin in keshela, put it in your pocket for a couple of minutes, or your pocketbook, whatever you want, and we'll hopefully we'll be able to arrive at some answer after examining another five or six sources. Good. So now look at source bet. This is the author of Shulchan Aruch. In some Siman Tuf Resh Ayin Aleph, the Mechaber writes, in Sif Aleph, Tzarich Lizaher Ma'od V'Hadlakat Neirot Chanukah. You have to be very careful to light Neirot of Chanukah. V'afilu Ani Hamit Parnes Min Hatzdakah. Even a person who supports himself or herself from charity, Shoel will borrow candles. O Mocher Ksuto, you sell the shirt off your back, Velokeach Shemen Lahadlik, and you buy oil. There are only two mitzvot. Which one?
Abakosos.
Only other time where such a requirement exists. Because normally, what is the rule of pinky? What is the rule of pinky? You are not allowed to spend more than 1/5 of your assets for a particular mitzvah. Not allowed to. Because if you do, you become a burden upon society to be supported. And the halacha is trying to not that you should be supported by society. So if it means that we're going to tell you, don't buy a pair of tefillin, don't buy tzitzis, don't buy a lulav and asrog, that's what we're going to tell you. Never allow to spend more than 1/5 of your income. Well, if you don't have anything, you're not going to tell you to sell your shirt, sell your garment, here you have to. Kama neirot madlik. How many candles do you light? Balayla rishon madlik echad. Mikan va'elech mosif v'holech. You add a candle. Ad shebaleil acharon yishmone. Va'afilu im rabim b'nei habayit lo yadliku yoter. Even if there are many people in your house, what is the maximum number of candles that should be lit? 8 on the last day. As I told you, Karo follows Tosafot. Turn the page for a minute to source Dalid. There is the Tosafot. This is where Karo got his law from. Hamahadrim in Hamahadrim. Nira Lari, it appears to the Ri, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, the Beit Shammai u Beit Hillel lo kaimi ela aner ish u beito. The going up, depending on the number of nights, only applies to the original takana of having ner ishu beito, one candle per family. So if you want to be mahadrim in a mahadrin, it's not one candle per family, that's only the first night. On the second night, 2 per family, 3 per family, etc. Shekein yesh yoter hidur. There is more hidur, more beautification of the mitzvah, the ika hekera, when there is an opportunity to recognize, kishimosiv v'holech, when you increase the number as Hillel demands, o michaser, or you decrease the number the way Shammai demands, keneged yomim hanichnasim o hayotzim. Aval, im ose ner lechol echad, if you're going to light a candle in your house, for every member of your family, afilu Yosef mikan va'elech, even if you're going to what? If you're going to start adding on, so there are five people in the house, the next night you do 10, and so on and so forth. Leka hekera. Somebody who's walking by is never going to know what's going on in this house. Sheyizberu, they will be of the opinion, shekach yesh b'nei adam babayit. But on the second night, what are they going to think? Oh, there are 10 people here tonight. Why are they going to make that mistake? Because on the first night, there was only one per candle. So, on the first night, if there are 5 people in your house, there'll be 5 candles. So he knows there are 5 people in the house. Next night, he sees 10 candles. Are there 5 people who are lighting 2? Or 10 people who are lighting 1? So Tosfot is of the opinion that if the passerby cannot identify your heker, it's no heker. That's not part of the mitzvah. It is one, if you remember a shiur I gave either last year or the year before. Last year or the year before. That Chanukah is the only mitzvah around where my fulfillment of a mitzvah depends on your perception. Remember that? Only mitzvah around. So I'll give you just one of the many proofs that we offered. If I pick up my menorah, because I lit it in my closet, there is an opinion that you're allowed to, that the definition of the mitzvah is not to light it, but to place the menorah in its proper place. Hanacha oseh mitzvah. The Gemara rejected that because what is somebody who sees me carrying, what's he going to say? Why am I carrying the menorah in his house? Because there's no light in the kitchen. He's using it for himself. So we don't want anybody carrying the menorah, even though you're allowed to according to that opinion. Or, if you remember correctly, I told you about people who live on a corner house. What do they have to do? According to the Gemara we read, they have to light on both sides of the house. Both sides of the house. So, Oren, Bina, Ora, and what's his name? Meyer, Andani, have to light on both sides. On Granville, and on Hudson. They have to light on both sides. Why? Because if somebody passes by and doesn't see a menorah, he's going to think, I don't like the candles. So if my lit on Granville and he walks by in Hudson, oh, Ora and Donnie don't like candles. If they light on Hudson and somebody, Vivi walks on Granville, they don't like candles. So your perception of the home determines whether they fulfill the mitzvah. So Tosfot is of the opinion that if the passerby cannot be absolutely certain, are there 10 people lighting 1? Or 2 people? Or 5 people lighting 2? You can't do that. Now, what does this tell me about whether or not there was a menorah or not? Did everybody have a menorah at that time? Absolutely not. Today, in theory, Tosfos' concern is not a concern. At that time, what did you do? You took a piece of tin foil, you put it down, you schmaltzed the candle into the tin foil, and everybody just lit and put it on the tin foil.
Unless you used a potato.
Right? Okay. But a potato is a menorah. Uh-huh. It could be like a menorah. But if you have a clear menorah, does anybody get any confusion when you see 5 beautiful menorot in the house? You know, there are 5 people here.
That's why you shouldn't put them together in succession.
Correct. That is correct. It should be, right, according to Tosfot. But Today, Tosas' concern is not really a concern, because nobody just lights on tin foil. Everybody has their own menorah. But that's what Tosas says. That's what Tosas says. Good. Yeah. Now, if you go back to page number three, to page number one, to source Gimel, Caro made the statement, even if there are a lot of people, the maximum number on light number one, on night number one is one, maximum is two. So on the bottom you have the Gra, the Gaon. And he's going to tell you what I just told you. V'afilu Rabin, Tosvot, the Gaon often identifies for you where did Caro get something. Because Caro followed Mr. Rambam, who never gave a source why he passed in the halacha. Never. Rambam wrote why he never gave sources. Because he said, I just want people to know the bottom line. If I'm going to give a source, you can say different, you can argue with me. Just accept the halacha. And that's what Caro wanted. I'm not giving you any sources. So all of the many of the commentaries try to identify what might be the primary source for Caro. Because Caro is not a Rishon. He's not one of the Rishonim. He's much later. Caro was in the 16th century, in the 1500s. So we are looking for much earlier sources. The Balei HaTosfos are in the 12th century. So the Gaon writes, Tosvot. The Lokoi Amahadrin, it doesn't go on the Mahadrin. It only goes on the original state. The Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin only goes on the original practice. The Imkain Lo Heve Heker. Tosfos is the author of the opinion that you must have a Heker for each stage of the mitzvah of what? Of Hadlakat Nero. It's not enough for people to know he's lighting Chanukah lights. Why isn't that enough? When you light candles, everybody will see it's for Chanukah. It's not enough. He has to be able to understand not only your primary mitzvah, but what level of heder you're doing. The guy outside has to understand what level of heder. So Tosfos says, do one of two things. Be consistent every night. If there are five people, every night you light five. But if you want to start increasing based on which night it is, get rid of all the things. Only one guy lights, and now we can understand what's running in this house. They're fulfilling the Mahadran Mina Mahadran stage. So on night number one, they light one. Night number three, they light three. Night number eight, they light eight. Kacha Omrim, so says the Gaon. So says the Gaon.
Doesn't work if you have a different amount of people in your house each night. So you have company one night.
Correct.
Shabbos, whatever.
That's correct. Makes no difference. That is correct. But now the Gaon continues and he says, I'm going to prove this to you. And I'm going to tell you why the Rif quoted that little story. Continues the Gaon. V'yesh Omrim, and others say, Kein Kasav HaRambam LeHalacha. The Rama said, if you go back to source Bet for a second, I only read Karo. Now comes the Rashi print, where it says Hagah. Hagah means an additional comment, that the Rashi print is the Rama. V'yesh Omrim, D'chol Echad Mibnei HaBayit Ladlik. Everybody should light. Everybody should light. V'chein haminhag hapashut. What does that mean? Minhag hapashut. The widespread practice is that what? Everybody lights. Sure, Rama, you're an Ashkenazi. So in every city in Ashkenaz, in Europe, in Poland, and in Bybrek, and in Belz, everybody lit. Yeah. Because Rama was never in Spain. You know, he was never in Morocco. So he never saw what they were doing. Very nice. So now, continue Go back to the Gaon in source 3, the second to the last line before that line over there. V'yesh omrim, who is that? Ken Kosef HaRambam LaHalacha. Nira, it appears to me, Shekein Hu Dat HaRif. The Rif also says, like the Rambam, not like Tosfot, that everybody can light, plus, everybody can add. Did you see that any place in the Rif? We read the Rif carefully. Did it look, flash back to the top of the page for a minute? Does the Rif say anything? Oh, that's what the Gaon. That's exactly what the Gaon's going to say. That's exactly what the Gaon's going to teach us. Let's read it. Midehavi Meimra the Rabba Babarchana Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shnei Zekenim. Since he brought this story of the two scholars in Sidon, and he gave their reasons. Kineged Pare Hachag, or the Malin Bakodesh. Now, if you learn out the number, let's say for Shammai for a second, if you learn out the number from the Pare Hachag, that you go down, is there any indication by the Pare Hachag that you have to know? You have to be able to identify, oh, today's the first day of Sukkot. Any mitzvah to be makir it? There's no hekera demanded, oh, I have to know specifically there were 13 on the first day. There aren't there. No. So if the reason for lighting candles is to follow the pattern of what? The Pare Hachag, then Heker becomes inconsequential. Because by the Pare Hachag, nobody ever demanded that I have to have expertise to know, oh, today's the third day of Sukkot, must be 11. There is no such halacha to remember it. Of what?
What takes the place of Heker?
Where you can recognize and identify what's going on.
Mm-hmm. What takes the place of it,
though? Where?
If you're saying that Heker
is not significant. Good. That would mean that when they come to the Beit HaMikdash, you, in order for them to be Mekayim the Mitzvah, you have to know, oh, today's the third day of Sukkot. That's why they're bringing how many bulls? 11 bulls. No one in Klal Yisrael was expected in the Beis HaMikdash to watch exactly how many bulls they were bringing today so that we should figure out, oh, today's the third day of Sukkot. There isn't any. So the carryover is that so too by Ner Chanukah. You don't have to have a heker to figure out the details. All you have to know is what? Just as in the Mikdash, what do you have to know? They brought bulls. So too, what do you have to know? What is the person doing? He's lighting their Chanukah. So, says the Gaon, you know why the Rif decided to quote this story? Because the story included the selection of the reason. And when you see that reason, I, Rif, am asking you to take it one step further. Not just that we're going down according to Shammai, but I want you to learn something else from the comparison to the bulls. Just as when we all, Amir Tzah Hashem, will come make Aliyah on the Yontov of Sukkot, we are not expected to look at the number of bulls that the Kohen is sacrificing, and then tell, Hayoim Yoim Shlishi Shel Sukkot, because there were 11 bulls. Ain't no such obligation. So too, when there is when the Yontov of Chanukah comes, there is no expectation that a person be able to identify who's doing the Mahadrin and who's doing the Mahadrin in a Mahadrin. What is the only thing you have to know as a passerby that they're being Mekai in the midst of Ner Chanukah? So the Gaon says that's why the Rif quoted the story. Because the story is communicating to us a halacha that I'm paskening against Tosfot. Tosfot believed that part and parcel of the mitzvah of Hadlakat Ner Chanukah is not only to perceive the mitzvah of lighting, but to know exactly whether it's day 2, day 7, day 8. Says the Rif, I'm going to side with my fellow Sephardi comrade, the Rambam, and say everybody can light as much as they want, as is our Ashkenazic practice. In fact, it is the only time in Shulchan Aruch, the only time, where Karo the Sephardi follows Tosfos the Ashkenazi. The only time. And the Ramah, the Ashkenazi, follows Rambam the Sephardi. It's the only time that this happened. That in terms of Psak Halacha, Karo tells us only one menorah. Where did he see that? In Tosfos. Tosfos is an Ashkenazi scholar. We, the Ramah, for us, is the king of the Ashkenazic poskim. And where did he get his? He got it from the Rambam. It's the only time that that has happened. So tomorrow when you go shopping in whatever the name of that place is. What? No, the other one.
Grand and Essex.
You'll tell somebody, you know there's only one time. You should tell them to put that up on a sign in the window. Not the how much candles cost or the oils cost. Put that sign up. Let them learn something when you're online. Yeah. That's what the Gaon says. That's what the Gaon says.
Can I ask a question?
Go right ahead. Yes.
I feel like I'm missing something because I always understood that verbiage to mean yet one more step. But
correct.
Or say no.
Excellent observation. That's perhaps the reason why Rambam disagreed with Tosfot. You can't, Mr. Tosfot, say v'hamahadrin menahadrin is not building upon the mahadrin. You can't say that, Mr. Tosfot. You can't. It's wrong. And therefore, I believe that once I reach the stage of mahadrin, where everyone lights one candle, now v'hamahadrin, you want to build on it, on the first, you keep adding. You're right. Tosfot does not read it that way. I don't know why. I agree with you. The simple flow of the language agrees with you 1,000%. Very good point. Very good point. Yeah. Yeah. Now, in source Hay, on the other page, next side, you have the stapler. No, his actual name is the Stipler, the Kehilas Yaakov, and he made staplers. That's why he's called the Stipler. So the Stipler tries to explain why Tosfot is so insistent that I have to be aware of what's happening. That I have to be able to figure out, is it number of people or number of days? Why do I have to be so rich?
You're talking about the person who's observing.
What? Yes, the person who's observing. Correct. Says the Stipler. And this touches upon another machloikis. How did the miracle in the Beit HaMikdash actually take place that it was lit 8 days? How did it take place? Give me a couple of possibilities as to how that cruise of oil lasted 8 days. What happened on the first day?
No, the shamash was always forever going. Wasn't
there is no shamash.
It
doesn't exist in the Mikdash. It doesn't exist at all. That's going to be next week's shir. Next week's shir, I'm going to talk about the shamash and show you a fantastic interpretation of Rashi against the standard explanation why we have a shamash. So, that's next week's share.
I thought that in the Beit that there was a miracle.
No. Nope. Nope. Okay. So what happened? How did the miracle take place? Give me a couple of possibilities. What happened?
There was the right amount of oil for one night. Good. Somehow the second day it just kept being good. It didn't go down. It just
stayed that way.
Didn't get used up as it burned.
Okay, that's one suggestion. That's one suggestion. Now, what is... That's not the... That's Reb Chaim believes, and I'm going to tell you why he believes that in a minute.
More oil appears.
Good, more oil appears.
It's like the jug.
The standard interpretation is that the oil burnt out, and poof, the next day, the cruise oil was full again. They were going to say, look, we had one night, so we lit it. So there's no more oil. What can you do? Can't light the minnow. All of a sudden, we lit it there again. It's there again. Good. What's a third possibility? Third possibility is some claim they actually divided the one cruse into eight parts. Knowing that it's going to take 8 days to produce new oil, so they said, okay, it won't burn all night. It'll burn an eighth of a night. At least we'll have something every single night. So there are halachic issues with every one of these, except for your suggestion. I'll tell you why. Reb Chaim says that the Torah explicitly states that in the oil of the Mikdash, where does it have to come from? What's the source of the oil used in the Mikdash? Shemen Zayit Zach. Pure oil from a olive. Good. Let's take the standard interpretation. The oil burnt out.
Yeah, so the miracle oil can't...
And then asks Reb Chaim... You can't use miracle oil for the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot in the Mikdash. What do you mean it burnt out and God replaced it? Who cares what God does? It doesn't. It's not Shemen Zayit. It's not Shemen Zayit. So that's why Reb Chaim objected to that.
Well, the other
so too. So therefore, what says Reb Chaim? What is the only way in which the oil, the miracle could have taken place, and it would be? No, dividing the tithe is also wrong. It stayed there. They put the whole cruse in the first night and was consumed slowly. So every night was burning Shemen Zayis. That's what Reb Chaim says. Correct.
What's his objection to dividing it into eight pieces?
Because you're not supposed to be Somech al Hanes. And when a mitzvah comes, you're supposed to do it properly. And if you don't have something for tomorrow, the Rabbeinu Shalom will exempt you. It's beyond your control. You don't, by putting in the only in eighth, the first night, in theory, they were not going to be mekayim the mitzvah. Because the mitzvah is, me'erev ad boker, from the night until the day.
Side comment. For a Pesach, if you don't have the correct amount of matzah, should you eat not the correct amount for a different part? No, you're going to eat your kazayit for, let's say, matzah and then not have it for afikoman.
That's a machlokes. Whether everything's a machlokes. If whether or not, when it's a tumarta, you only have one kazayis of matzah, what should you do? Some say take non shmura matzah just to make hamotzi at the beginning of the meal. And save the one kezias of shmura for the end of the meal. Others say no. Fulfill the mitzvah at the beginning. You don't have for afikoman, so you don't have for afikoman. There is a whole machlok. There's always a machlok is about everything.
Okay, nobody would say.
Yes.
In
other words, is it
yes. Because they knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed the miracle. Because he knew that after 8 days, human consumption production will have fresh oil. It took 8 days because the production of oil was in a town in Israel, I forgot the name of it, and it took 3 days to get there, 3 days to get back, and a day or two to produce it. That's how they knew it would be 8 days. Until they got, they didn't know what's going to happen.
You're assuming that it was the full menorah?
Yes.
They didn't reduce.
That is correct, which was seven candles. Seven candles in the Mikdash. So now, says the Stipler, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something new every single day. It's not just that what? You know, there was a miracle. And we found one cruise. Every single day, that particular miracle enhanced its glory, particularly the way Reb Chaim has it. Wow. The same cruise of oil is still going. So in order to recognize, to have the absolute clarity, what am I remembering, says Tosfos, I want you to be absolutely clear, because it reflects the quality of the nes itself. It reflects the quality of the nes itself. And that's part of the mitzvah. Not just to thank God for the oil, but every night HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mechadesh his creative powers and did something with that very single cruise of oil, no matter which way you interpret what actually happened. And therefore, we understand the Rif, we understand Tosfos, and we have a better understanding of what the role of the Mahadran Min HaMahadran is. Because it amplifies the quality of the miracle itself, and we have to be aware of what happened at that particular time. All right? We'll stop here, and we'll continue.